On this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with ATMs nationwide, Matty Lee, Gordon Wittenmeyer, and I discuss the struggles of the Cubs through 12 games, their historically slow start offensively, and we get pretty spirited on where blame lies.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With Cubs checking, you'll score a Cubs debit card so you can show your support every time you pay. Open today at wintrust.com/cubstalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's play two.
Way back! It might be! It could be! It is! Holy cow!
The fly! He scores! Cup win!
Welcome to the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide with our great producers, Tony Gill and Joe Collins, our Cubs insiders, Gordon Wittenmeyer and Matty Lee. Tim Stebbins has the day off. I'm David Kaplan. So we come out of a Milwaukee series. The Cubs get a breather on Thursday, and then they go against a team that has also had its struggles, folks, in the Atlanta Braves, but they're a very talented team that many people expect to right the ship fairly quickly. Matty, coming out of that Brewers series, how surprised are you that this thing is almost grabbing punchline status around the game because of the inept offense?
Right. I mean, I didn't expect them to turn everything around from last year on a dime, but I didn't expect this bad of a start. I mean, it's historically bad, right? I mean, you had Jordan Bastian tweeted this out the other day from Cubs historian Ed Harding. The Cubs' 49 hits in the first 10 games were the fewest hits by the team over 10 consecutive games in any season since at least 1901. Historically great. Bad.
It's literally crazy, Gordon, to be this historically bad that the fine folks at Bleacher Nation, who I think do a really good job, put out this tweet with 59 hits. And Matty just referenced what Jordan tweeted. The Cubs have fewer hits than the Red Sox. Reds, Dodgers, Astros, White Sox, Angels, Twins, and Cardinals have runs scored. That's brutal.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. The hits are that's a troubling statistic, no question. I don't look at it quite I don't take it the historical part of it as seriously as some people do, because historically hits are down anyway. So if you're near or at the bottom of the league, it's going to be almost by definition historically bad. So there is that element, but they are, compared to their peers, awful. And more to that point, because they were awful last year, right? Except that even last year, they scored, like, they haven't scored more than 5 runs in a game this year. Not once. And last year, here's their in their third game, they scored 9. Their fourth game, they scored 8. Their fifth game, they scored 8. They scored more than 5 runs in 8 of their first 15 games last year, even in a year where offensively they didn't do much. And I'll even add this. In 2019, that year that Theo came out and said, this is a year of reckoning, we got to start strong, and they admittedly, John Lester came out and said it about 6 games in, pressed. They started 1-6. They looked awful. Even that team scored 12 in its first game. They scored 10 in their third game. They lost the game 13-10 in their seventh game. They scored 14 and 10. They got off to a 3-8 start. And five times they scored 10 or more runs in that stretch. So even then, when they're, it's like, it, you know, they went from feast and famine to just no more feast.
Well, last year they also got off to a ridiculously hot start. So I've been comparing this year and last year a little less just because they did get off to a good start. But I mean, if we're going to use that logic, maybe they're going to be set. Maybe they'll just hit the playoffs and start hitting because the opposite happened in 2020.
Yeah, but how are they going to get there?
How'd they get the opposite the first time around?
So as I look at this whole thing, and I liked, you know, Jed's quote, and there was a, you know, good column. If anyone hasn't heard, Jed Gordon posted up, you know, a good column. It starts, blow up the Cubs, right? They can't hit. The starting rotation's inconsistent, blah, blah, blah. And then Anthony Rizzo's quote this spring, if we get off to a 3-4 start, there'll be quick stories about who's getting traded. We already know that. But then Jed said, you have to look at this appropriately, but – you also have to say you saw our team struggle at the end of last year offensively. We've seen struggles going back a few years, so you can't just wipe everything away as a small sample. Gordon, how do you balance that? He says it's important to find balance, but how do you balance it when the fan base has eyes? They have two sources, their right and their left eye, and they look and go, I've seen this movie for 3 or 4 years.
They're not going to be bad. All season. They're going to go through stretches. Who knows? Maybe it'll happen this homestand. I doubt it. You got the Braves, and then you got Jacob DeGrom coming to town. And then you got the Brewers again right behind him. But at some point here in the early going, they're going to turn around. They're going to put up some big numbers, and somebody's going to overreact to the one game they score 8 runs. And there's going to be all these stories about how they're breaking out of their slump and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at some point they're going to go on a two-week binge and maybe a three-four-week binge, and their numbers are going to start to normalize again. And then they're going to go right back to another one of these stretches because that's what they do. That's what a lot of teams do to some extent. That's what this team has. That's what this team's character has sort of become. So what do? You evaluate it from 10,000 feet and 30,000 feet. And what that is, okay, well, what does Javi Baez bring? Do I want to extend him? Because he's a very exciting player. He's a fan favorite. We can market him, and he does things defensively. And overall, as a package, maybe we want to keep him. Chris Bryant's the better hitter of the bunch of guys that are in walk years. Do we want to keep that and build around him? Whatever we do, we're going to pick and choose which guys we want to keep because they do have skill sets that'll play. But especially if you put them in a lineup that's more equipped to have some diversity of skill sets to it, like they did in 2016 when they had Dexter Fowler leading off and they had Ben Zobrist playing most days. So if you can recapture that, some of these guys will play going forward. So you kind of, that's what you're balancing. I don't think you're balancing it as perspective on winning this year.
Maddie, as you hear Jed say that, you're a trained professional. You've worked in the NBA, now in Major League Baseball. Do you think privately he's already starting to have an eye towards, all right, who am I moving and when can I move them?
I think they've definitely had those conversations, right? He said it's not productive to have those conversations every week, which I believe, but that doesn't mean that they're not having them at all. I was pleasantly surprised, though, that he did address the fact that at this point, we can't just give it up to small sample sizes, which, I mean, obviously it is a small sample size. That is absolutely true. But we came out of last year talking about some of the same issues. And as we've talked about before on this podcast, we didn't see the diversification of the lineup that they talked about doing. And so they're still talking about some of the same things, right? David Ross said the other night, we're pretty homer dependent. And he said, I realized that that's some of our makeup and how this team is built, but we've got to figure out how to score runs and how to make things happen, how to put pressure on defenses in other ways. And for, you know, the time being, that's on these guys, this group of players who aren't necessarily built to do that, to figure out how to do that and turn this offensive slump around, which, like Gordon said, it'll happen. But it's also a mental thing, right? These players have seen the exact same thing that we have, and they've been right in the middle of it. And we talked last year about the 60 game season and the tendency to put pressure on yourself when you know that you have so little time. I think there's a little bit of the same forces at play with an early season slump, because again, we're looking at small sample sizes and guys are looking at those numbers, those bad numbers on the board, and trying to work through that on the mental side of the game as well.
Yeah, I talked to Anthony Rizzo the other day. I don't know if either of you heard his comments, but you know, he's a guy who he believes, he's the eternal optimist, but he believes the offense is close to breaking out, especially himself. And that night, he ended up getting two hits. He said, I know when I'm off and I know when I'm close. And I'm close. And then he had two hits that night. Do you believe he's close, Gordon?
I believe he knows himself well enough. If he's saying that about himself, I'm fine. I'm chuckling because we're 2 weeks into this damn season. If they're not close now, when are they going to be close? I mean, you know, a week from now, you have him on your show. And if they're still kind of scuffling, but maybe they've had one, you know, outburst of scoring, you know, he'll say, oh, well, we're really close. Look at the other day. Eventually he's going to be right, you know, but there's no, I don't see any signs of team-wide that necessarily happening. I think Chris Bryant's off to sort of an under the radar promising start. I do think your guy Rizzo, again, he knows himself well enough. He's had slow starts in the past. He could be ready to break out into one of those stretches. Javi's still trying to find it.
Well, I'd say Javi, he's had a few bad at bats, sure, but he's had more of those kind. I'd put him not quite in the same tier as Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant is clearly having the best offensive season to start, but I'd say Javi Baez next, even though you have had some ugly strikeouts mixed in there.
Well, the reason that I don't put Javi in that basket is because even some of his more impressive hits are swinging at bad pitches. So he's still chasing. He's still swinging at bad pitches. That hit the other night for two runs. That wasn't a great pitch.
Golf a homer
on the left field line.
Yeah, and then he golfs the homer too against Pittsburgh. I mean, those aren't great pitches to be. Those are chase pitches. He's chasing. But he's got enough skills that he reached those pitches. He's not reaching very many of them, but he's chasing a lot of them. So I don't see him quite there yet. When he stops chasing, then you're going to see those same hits, but they're going to be closer to the strike zone, and there's going to be a lot more of them, and there's going to be a lot less swing and miss.
He just looks different to me at the plate, where the toe tap is gone. It's a bigger leg kick. He just doesn't look right. Am I wrong in that assumption? I've gone back and watched at bats from 2 years ago and watched where he is today. He just doesn't look like the same guy at the plate.
Oh, and he's been playing with that stride that you just mentioned too. He's obviously playing with and tweaking with some stuff, but I mean, with where the rest of the offense is, he's still one of the better hitters, or at least has had one of the better starts.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, numbers wise, but yeah, you know, again, it's you got so many guys hitting under 200 and with the OPSs in the fives that, you know, it's not hard to stand out in that group. I think he's more prone to maybe especially this year to we talked about this, I think, on a previous podcast. They've preached aggressiveness in early in the count coming into this season and trying to hunt fastballs. And actually they're missing fastballs. But he might be more prone to falling into bad habits trying to do that. And then on top of that, pressing.
For him, too, before the season, both Chris Bryant and David Ross talked about this notion that last year they were trying too much to have team at bats essentially and not trying to to address weaknesses as opposed to lean into strengths. And so that's a balance for everyone. But I think that might be some of what we're seeing with Javi, is trying to balance those strengths, but not, or lean into the strengths, not chase too much.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
In terms of what you've seen from the pitching staff, I thought Jake was solid the other day. I thought to put Alec Mills in 20 minutes notice, and he pitched four solid innings, gave up two runs, and they ended up winning the ballgame. I thought that was a really gutsy performance by him. I mentioned Justin Steele to you guys a little while ago. Like, I'm seeing some solid things from the pitching staff. Yes, they've had their hiccups. I just feel like the pitching staff's taking them out going, okay, I have to be almost perfect here because our offense stinks.
Well, dude, the rotation, but two times through, had an ERA of 5.5. That's not solid. I mean, you know, a couple of those games, they didn't give them a chance.
You're telling me that they aren't taking the mound, trying to be so fine that they're not pitching free and easy?
Well, maybe, but you could go across the board with the whole team on that, on both sides of things. But they have more pitchers by definition, and Maddie, being a former catcher, knows this better than any of us. They have control of the action. They have control of the emotion and the pace and how the game gets played. They're just not performing. Now, I will say this, at least two of those games where there were clunkers were like one bad inning, but those were innings that they couldn't limit the damage. And that's a hallmark of a good pitcher. A good starting pitcher is to limit the damage, and they couldn't. And so if that's what we're going to see now, Zach Davies, maybe that's an aberration. This guy's got a really good track record for a long time. He's been really consistent. I think he's going to be okay. But none of these guys, it's win day when they take their mound, right? Even Kyle Hendricks, as much as we all love Kyle Hendricks, when Darvish took the mound, the way he pitched the last year and a half, it was win day. That's what Ross used to say. When Arrieta was here last time, for 2.5 years, when he took the mound, it was win day. And for most of that time, when Lester took the mound, it was win day. So we don't see that anymore. We don't see that anywhere on this pitching staff right now. And I don't know where that's going to
come from. The Brewers.
Well, but what about next time Alec Mills pitches? Does anybody think that's win day?
No, I know. I absolutely agree with you. I was just joking with his track record against the Brewers. But I also don't think that it's time to write this rotation off yet either. Like, when we look at Zach Davies, that was the second time he'd faced the Pirates in the span of 5 days, right, or a week, less than a week. And then with Trevor Williams, he's facing his former team, so they obviously know him really well. Yeah, not good performances, but I tend to look at those as probably aberrations. I mean, we'll see. It's early in the season. We've only seen a couple starts out of each of these guys, but yeah, there you have a bunch of guys who are pretty good. You don't have the shutdown ace that Yu Darvish was last year. But to Cap's point, I mean, I think Adbert Alzolay's start the other day was a really good example, and he didn't specifically talk about this, so I'm not going to pretend like I knew what was going on in his head, but he pitched 5 shutout innings, looked awesome. The Cubs only scored 1 run. So once he starts giving up hits in the 6th, he did a really good job of then, you know, getting the out even with the bases loaded. But there is more pressure when you only have that one run lead at that point.
I know this might be an unpopular opinion, and it's not one I usually take with starting pitchers that are going so well, but I question, even with a low pitch count, whether Alzolay should have been out there in the 6th inning. He's really young. They're going to monitor his workload all year anyway. They know that they've got really massive limits on him compared to everybody else because he's young, because of his inexperience. He had 21 innings all of last year and not a hell of a lot the year before. So you're going to watch him. He's also got a little bit of an injury history. So why, and he's so young, why wouldn't you let him have 5 scoreless or 5, whatever it was, take it, leave, walk away triumphant, feeling good about yourself. and you've got this bullpen that's been doing a really good job, go out there and get the last 12 outs.
What's the most positive thing that you both have seen through the first 12 games? For me, it's easy. It's Craig Kimbrel, whose velocity's back, his movement's back, and his performance is back.
I'd absolutely agree with that. I'd say he's the most, the biggest silver lining, right? I think Alec Mills is up there as another one, just in terms of he's performed in such different situations in just the first couple weeks, right? He's got that save. He had a solid start, and he was obviously been a middle reliever in there too. So I'd throw him in there too, but I think you're right that Craig Kimbrel's got to be the biggest one.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why Kimbrel's going to be the first one traded. But I would add one more guy to the mix. I'm really most impressed with Chafin's new car. Oh, that is a sweet ride. I don't know if anybody's seen that.
To have 40 years ago,
I had that car in the 80s. It's a sweet ride, let me tell you. And it looks as good. The picture I saw of him next to his car, that looks as good as my car ever looked too. That's awesome. And he's got, except for one hiccup so far this season, he's got the performance to go with it. I was saying earlier, this guy looks like he walked out of the 1970s and he just updated to the 1980s, and it is a sweet thing.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, it's a rough start. There's a lot of baseball left, but I still, Maddie, I said this to Gordon the other day when we were on the phone, that I still think privately upper management, whether that's ownership, Jed Hoyer, his closest lieutenants, are not surprised by this start. You think that's fair?
Well, I would say that, because I'm surprised by how bad it is, I would hesitate to say that they're not surprised at all. But yeah, I can absolutely see how, sure, maybe saying these guys will all turn it around was a little PR-y.
I think I believe that they're not surprised at all, but I don't think they would have been surprised at 8-4 either at this point, largely because of the Pirates are early on. I do think everybody's surprised that this lineup is this friggin' bad 2 weeks in. It's almost statistically impossible to be this bad with guys that have the experience that these guys have.
So, Gordon, what do you say to people that go, well, wait a minute, maybe it's just their batting average on balls in play, their BABIP, they're hitting into some bad luck? I don't agree with that, because I see a team getting just handled by fastballs in the zone. That's the amazing part of it to me.
That is the amazing part about it. And it does speak to, Maddie talked earlier about the mental side of this thing. That's definitely a huge part of it. Their approach, the thing they tried to emphasize coming into the season, changes they tried to make coming into the season. Eventually they're going to settle in, and each guy is going to kind of say, all right, I'm going to what works for me. They're going to find a comfort zone. They're going to get some at-bats under them, and you'll start to see numbers stabilize a little bit and be a little closer to what the career marks look like. But I do think that this is not luck. This is not BABIP. this is approach and bad execution, poor decision making during at bats, and probably maybe even underestimating the Pirates. I don't know, but and by the way, don't dismiss this either. Two of those pitchers they've seen with the Brewers, at least one of them they've seen twice, are two of the best pitchers in the division, if not the two best pitchers in the division. So that plays into it a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, I look at that Brewers team and I try to watch a lot of baseball every night, American and National. That Brewers team's pretty good.
Yeah, they were just overmatched for the last couple games. Oh, and the fact that they even stole that win, right, was surprising, especially since Kyle Hendricks was a late scratch in that game and all of that. But yeah, they were just overmatched after that.
So yeah, and it was the Brewers' ace in that game, starting that game too. But they kept the Mills did a great job keeping it close.
At what point is it? June 1? Is it July 1? Is it sooner than that where Jed admits, okay, this is not going to happen?
He admitted it yesterday. If you read between the lines, he admitted it yesterday that this is all in play. Now, I don't think he would have denied that this was all in play, even in spring training. But he's not hiding behind sample sizes. And he's saying, we got to be real and honest about this. We've seen this as a pattern for years. I think he's given us the answer. Now, the only thing that remains to be seen is when the market across the league develops. When there's a market for some of these guys, that's when you'll start to see movement. That usually doesn't happen.
Let me ask you both something. And I'm not saying it happens today, so don't think I'm going down that road. But if a team that feels like they can win the World Series this year and has a serious injury, they lose someone doesn't perform through the first 30 days to the point where they think, you know what, we took a roll of the dice on that guy, it's not working. Do you think there's a chance Jed would pull the plug? Like, if you trade your closer in the next 30 days, you're basically saying I'm giving up on the season. If you trade Chris Bryant, I'm giving up on the season. If you trade Javi Baez, I'm giving up on the season. Do you think Jed's willing to do that in the rare chance that somebody has an injury and calls him in the next 30 days and says, okay, I lost an outfielder. I need Chris Bryant. What do you need?
If it's Craig Kimbrel, yes. But you've laid out a very, very extreme example. That is so rare. Even a team that would suffer an injury like that, if you're talking we're in the middle of April, for God's sake. If you're talking about May 2nd, that's still way too early for buyers and teams that consider themselves contenders to try to go out and pull a trigger on something like that. I mean, if something just, again, it's rare. It could happen. I'm not saying it can't, but it's so extremely rare for teams to get that aggressive. It would have to be something that just almost organically came together in a perfect storm. I just don't see anything that early. I mean, I think June is about the earliest you're going to see something like that.
Maddie, would it surprise you?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with Gordon just in terms of the likelihood of that timing is not very good. My personal thoughts are, I think that this group at least deserves, and Cap, I feel like you're going to hate this, but I feel like this group at least deserves that the chance to prove that they can turn this around. And I know that we've seen
they've had three and a half years,
the same group of hitters in the last couple of years. But you know, last year does not quite qualify it as a full chance. And I think, you know, you've got a lot of guys in walk years who I think deserve a chance at least for the first couple months of the season to prove like, hey, what we've seen in the first 2 weeks is not who we're going to be.
Gordon, I got a great question for you.
Wait. I want to push back a little bit. I appreciate everything you said there, Maddie. And I think 99 times out of 100, I would agree with you and say that spot on. I don't think this team deserves that. And I know I've been a defender of these players, and I'm not defending these players now. But The only guys that have been here long enough to deserve any consideration are the biggest, most egregious offenders and causes for this slow start. They're these hitters. And none of the pitch, nobody outside of Kyle Hendricks on that pitching staff has been around long enough to deserve any extra consideration. I don't think this group has 18 players in walk years. It was built for a teardown. It was built for a roll of the dice. Well, you know, it's starting to come up craps, and they need to, I think maybe they'll blow it up sooner rather than later, but I don't think that group deserves this. And by the way, I think Rossi's on board with whatever the front office wants. It's not like he's a long-term manager with this group either.
Couldn't you also argue though, that it's not that it falls in the front office's court that they should have gotten them a bona fide leadoff hitter?
I would take it even higher. It falls on the ownership that this is where this roster is. But that said, the front office built this roster to go either way. And I don't think that there's going to be any love lost whichever way they go. I don't think that they're so invested in trying to win this year that they're going to sweat one drop of sweat in blowing it up.
And I disagree with you that this is on ownership. Now, you want to say that the last few years where they were more focused on...
How is this not on ownership? They forced payroll slashing to the point that Darvish got dumped.
Hey, I have no problem trading a guy who's going to be 35 that's had two arm surgeries.
In a vacuum, that's fine. But you're not trying to win this year when you make that move.
My bigger problem is that over the last few years, when wheelbarrows of cash were supposed to be dropped off at Theo's office, and instead they were more concerned with their real estate holdings in Wrigleyville that they were not in play on. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, name the guy that came along, and all of a sudden the spigot got turned off. I'm not saying they didn't have enough money to win. Lord knows they spent on a ton of guys, from Jason Hayward at 184 to Yu Darvish at 126 to Brandon Morrow was a horrific signing. You just name the contracts. They made some really bad trades on top of it. All of it.
This is the year they could afford. This is the year they had money coming off the books, and the luxury tax didn't have to be an issue to do what they did to the roster in the offseason.
But, Gordon, they're not good enough. If you said, go get the best leadoff guy in the game, here's whatever you need, Jed. This team isn't good enough.
Okay, well then, wait.
Nobody.
But now you're backing it up. You're going over the last 10 years, and you're saying this is on the front office and the regime for not developing talent. Yes. I think you're right about that. But I thought we were talking about putting this team together for this year and who's invested in trying to win this year. If you're talking about this roster this year, that's on ownership.
Gordon, Maddie, if I came to you and said, hey, I know that the foundation's cracking on your house, but I'll buy you an awesome sound system. Let's put a new deck on the back. We'll put a bunch of money into it, but the foundation still sucks. That's bad money it's good money after bad. This team was not built to win because it's physically impossible.
Okay, well then blow it up in the offseason. Or, and maybe this is what they've done, put together a team that you can blow up, that you can take a Trevor Williams on a short-term contract and turn him into an asset at the trade deadline, and Zach Davies at the trade deadline.
Bingo.
If you're going to do that, why didn't you move some of the core guys in the offseason when they had presumably more value? Especially, and I know we're talking during a pandemic, but by late in the offseason, you had some teams willing to spend some money on long-term assets. Seems like you could move them. Now, there's a calculus there. Are you waiting until finances stabilize and projections are more solid toward the trade deadline? And maybe that's even a rent-a-player you can get more for than you could have for, say, a Chris Bryant in January.
I'm going to use your term. I'm going to push back on you. I was the guy screaming at both of you and Tim, move these guys now. And you kept saying, hold on a second. You got to wait and trade these guys at the deadline. That's what you kept telling me.
I did say that.
Yeah. I still agree with that. But if you're talking about blowing it up, if you're talking about just blowing it all up, but
we've also said that in a large market like this, you can't just blow it up.
Yes, you can. Yes.
And now we go to the owners. Well, actually, Cap, she's right about that. You shouldn't be able to. Yes, you can, because Cubs helped invent big market tanking. Yeah, sure you can, because the Cubs friggin' invented it. But that's not, you shouldn't be able to do that. You have a league integrity problem when
that's
you're doing that.
That's a discussion, but you can't do that. That's the old Annie McPhail. David, I can't blow it up. We're in Chicago. That's bullshit. This is a bad baseball team.
No, he's right, though. He's right, though. No big market team should be doing that.
But that's a discussion.
This is a years-long problem that you've already pointed out, and we pointed it out ad nauseum for months.
Right.
If not years.
So at what point do they wake up and go, guys, just get what you can, move on. It's a bad team. We'll rebuild it. We did it. We'll do it again.
I think we're arguing semantics here because they've already done that. Right? They've already done that.
They haven't traded any of their big.
No, but they've already identified that. They're not all in this year. They knew coming in that it was going to be a matter of everything falling right to win. It may yet happen if they get off to some kind of sudden great surge here. But this team isn't built per se to win, not in any sort of big way, maybe in a crappy division. Right. Maybe if the hitters had gotten off to a better start.
And with all those one-year contracts, they're built to have a bunch of money come off the books this next year and give them flexibility. So over the next couple years, that's when we're going to see them do not tear it all the way down to the foundation and build it back up, but remodel the kitchen and then remodel the bathroom and then remodel the bedroom. So that you don't ever have that full rebuild, but by the end, everything's pretty new.
That's the thing. When Maddie said you can't do that in this market, that I think, I don't want to speak for you, Maddie, but when I agreed with that, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
But my point is they waited too long. And for really smart guys who I really like a lot, Theo and Jed, for them and their geek squad of guys on their Ivy named computer to not be able to move some of these guys 3 freaking years ago and go, guys, it's not working. It's not working. And to continue running it out, it's literally insane.
Let me ask you this, because one of the things when we talked early about what some of the solutions are and decisions are regarding some of these hitters, what if these Atlantic League rules are on the shorter horizon? What if moving the mound back works in the second half of the Atlantic League season this year, and they decide to bring that in as part of the new CBA? What if some of these shifts rules that they're proposing come into play? How does that change how good some of these hitters might become?
Your lefties would be happy about the shift rules.
Rizzo might be a 320 hitter at that point. Rizzo might have a better next 5 years than his last 5 years.
That's an interesting point. But
what about Javi if he's got a split second more to identify a breaking pitch?
Are you going to roll the dice on that and give him a big contract?
I'm telling you, you talked about these geeks and their Ivy League computers and their Briniac Mensa scores. You know, they can probably project this better than you or I can sitting here talking about it. But wouldn't that be part of the calculus? It's going to make hitters better, period. And if you've got guys that have basic natural skill sets that already have track records too at the big league level, what does that mean for a guy that's already won an MVP like Chris Bryant, or a guy that came really close like Javi Baez and has skills off the charts if he harnesses them?
Okay. And are you going to roll the dice and give them a long-term contract because they're not under team control anymore? Are you going to do that?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. That's the question I'm asking. If you think that that's part of value going forward, maybe you do, because it's already a legitimate debate.
That's a good question. It's a really good question.
If you guys want another debate, we just got breaking news.
What do we got?
Ryan DePera has received a 3-game suspension and an undisclosed fine for throwing behind Brandon Woodruff. It says that he has elected to appeal.
So he'll end up getting it knocked down to 2 games and move on, right?
Hey, let me ask you this. Jeff, you're an old guy like me. Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in fact, you're like way older than me. So when Contreras comes out after that game and says, well, you know, we probably shouldn't have been thrown at we should have been thrown at a position player. And I had a young reporter from Milwaukee, well, younger, who's been doing this for a while, say, wow, when was the last time saw a pitcher get thrown at? You just don't see that. And I'm thinking to myself, I used to see that all the time. That's how you did it.
That's why you do it.
That's why American League pitchers always got criticized so hard when they hit somebody. It was like, well, yeah, it's easy for you to do because you're not going to come to the plate. Yeah,
Roger Clemens used to get ripped for that.
Exactly. And now it's like this thing like, wow, you never see a pitcher get thrown at. That's who ought to get thrown at.
Yeah, I had no problem because he didn't go head hunting. He threw it behind him down at his legs. I had no problem with it. And then Wilson put his hand on the backside of the pitcher. Hey, we're good. We're good. And I heard Jim Deshaies say, now it's over. It's over.
Right. Yep. By the way, that's why Ryan Tepera got an MVP vote.
All right, guys, gals, we've gone 40 minutes and we have not yet solved the Cubs, but we will continue to try to do that here on the Cubs Talk Podcast.
We'll solve it on July 30th.
Oh, there are going to be moves way before that.
Well, that's the deadline. We'll know exactly how much we solved on July 30th. Put it that way.
There you go. For Matty Lee, for Gordon Wittenmeyer, for Joe Collins and Tony Gill, Tim Stebbins had the day off. Our Cubs content team always here for you. That's our second straight podcast with breaking news in the middle of it. I'm David Kaplan. We'll see you next time on the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide and that really sweet WATM card. We'll see you.